From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of June, 2026. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll take a look at the New World screwworm. It has crossed the border into South Texas. We'll hear from the Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, and then discuss what issues that might cause for cattle producers in the state of Illinois and across the Midwest with Teresa Steckler. We'll also today, of course, take a look at the weather forecast. Mike Tenor will be here. He's with T-Storm Weather in Naperville, Illinois. And we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to talk about a really brutal day in Chicago. Now, brutal doesn't mean that we had losses that were, you know, hitting the limits for the day, but down 30 cents at one point for soybeans during the day. Corn was off 7 to 8 at the end of the day. Blew through the 100-day moving averages, a lot of them. In new crop soybeans, down near the 200-day moving average. I'm wondering, because since, I'm going to guess, January reports, most of our analysts, when we have gotten to the top of the range, said you need to take advantage. And that happened a couple, two or three times. Again, actually, in the month of May. And I'm wondering whether producers actually managed to do that enough that they feel protected going into the rest of this growing season, at least on a large portion of their crop, and what the reaction was from them today.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wonderful question, Todd. I mean, talking to the guys that and gals that we talked to, certainly there was more corn sold, new crop, corn and soybeans, both, than what we saw, for instance, a year ago, and probably the last 3 years. But how much was sold? You know, I know that we've been pushing, you know, 50% corn and 60% beans. And quite frankly, some people have told us they thought that was nuts. And I get it whenever the market's rallying. But at the same time, we're not, when we're doing this, and the other good guys and gals in this business, when we're doing this stuff, we're not doing it based upon trying to outguess the market. We're doing it based on where we know the grower, you know, can pencil some profit. So no doubt in my mind that the grower overall didn't get to 50%. I mean, I would maybe spitball it at 25. You know, my guesstimate was 20 to 30 this week whenever I was asked this question. So, you know, I'm going to just call it 25 for now, which is better than what we saw a year ago, but it doesn't feel like near enough right now.
What caused the rollover today?
It's a variety of things. One of the things people were talking about was, you know, just some rumors that China has indicated they may not start any purchasing program until September. That's one of the things. Of course, this week it's been a little bit of a problem seeing, you know, the estimates on this Argentine crop growing. You know, and in all honesty, the funds since last week's big rollover, you know, they'd sold 80-some thousand contracts. They just continued, you know, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, you're probably going to see a pretty big drop in the commitment of traders long position for funds. And today, I would hate to think how many contracts they sold today. So the problem that you had, you know, on the way up, Todd, funds were buying while the farmer was selling and doing the right thing. They were rewarding the market. So the funds were buying while the commercials were selling, because the commercials sell when they buy it off the producers. They hedge that. And the problem that you had, for instance, on a day like today and yesterday and the day before, you know, is that there's still farmers selling because they're like, well, shoot, I may as well go ahead and get out of this. And so the commercials are still selling corn at the same time that the funds are selling corn, you know, and the buyers just are not showing up. And that's what's made this move pretty tough to stomach here.
Farmers will need to stay calm. What do you tell them now?
Well, I mean, you want to look, for instance, you know, Todd, last year we had very few opportunities to sell anywhere close to the crop insurance price, which was 470 last year. You know, you're looking at these corn closing over 450 this on today's trade. That's no beauty queen. I totally get it. But if we keep things in perspective, there was a lot of corn sold with a futures handle, you know, of three, starting with a three there last fall, you know, and so we've got to understand that all is not lost here. I go back to the basics, you know, and I'm talking to someone who's in kind of panic mode. I mean, this is no fun. You know it, Todd. You don't enjoy talking about it. I don't enjoy talking about it. But whenever a producer asks, what do we do now? Well, you just go back to the drawing board. You know, where can you make money? And there are a lot of growers in our part of the world that feel like they've got a better than average crop going right now. Not everyone, but there's a lot of growers that feel that way. And if you're in that camp, you know, you've got to update. Hey, what's my production look like? Where can I make money? And what am I going to do to at least lock in a worst case scenario?
So they'll be watching that. There's still always a chance for dry conditions and to take advantage of them during the summer months.
Absolutely. I mean, Northern Illinois is excessively dry. Rain looks like it's going to show up here in the next several days. I did a video with Eric Snodgrass here just a couple hours ago, you know, and he said the models are diverging and what they're predicting. If they would miss that rain though, Todd, there's no question that it's going to start raising some red flags, because the last thing you want to do is have a dry June. If you don't have a whole lot of moisture in the ground, typically that exacerbates any heat that you have in July. So they need to get that rain. If they do, you could expect that rallies could be really tough to come by. And on the flip side, you could see a lot of this that we've lost come right back into the market if that forecast we've got for the next 7 days doesn't verify.
July corn, by the way, finished 7 lower, December down 8 cents. November beans, 25 3/4 lower, and July wheat down 5.5 cents. The United States Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, is putting cattle producers on alert for an insect pest. The New World screwworm late yesterday was confirmed to have crossed the border from Mexico into South Texas. It was found in La Pryor, west of San Antonio. Secretary Rollins says USDA has teams on the ground to contain the insect pest.
We've established a 20-kilometer infested zone around the detection and implementing quarantines, movement controls, and surveillance in this area. We have expedited targeted release of the sterile New World screwworm flies, which is how we solve for the issue, of course, by immediately deploying ground release chambers in the area, in addition to the 4 million sterile flies per week already being released aerially in the area.
Rollins is worried about the economic consequences the insect can have on the herds in Texas. The screwworm fly lays eggs into open sores and wounds on cattle that can cause them to become sick once the larvae hatch. She says it's important to recognize the New World screwworm is primarily transmitted through animal movement, which is why producers in that area of Texas need to follow all guidelines.
This fly typically moves great distances because humans move animals, not because the fly flies to new areas. This is a really important point. The only way this spreads is through animal movement. It's not because the fly flies tens of miles or hundreds of miles on its own.
Teresa Steckler is a beef cattle specialist with the University of Illinois. She says cattle producers in the Midwest should stay watchful, but do not need to worry.
The only time that I would get excited would be if producers from Illinois would bring cattle up from along the border in Texas. And I don't see that happening. That's a completely different breed of cattle. We have our Angus, Semi, and black-hided cattle up here primarily. So right now, I'm not worried about the New World screwworm in Illinois.
Cattle producers are urged to visit USDA's screwworm.gov website for more information. The agency plans to hold press conferences each Tuesday and Thursday to help the industry monitor the situation. It's also set up a screwworm at USDA.gov email for those needing to report possible infestations. The pest, and this is important to understand, does not pose a food safety risk, as it's not a disease, but an insect that feeds on living tissue. Early treatment ensures, of course, the recovery of affected animals, making them safe to enter the food supply. However, that does not mean everyday Americans aren't involved in the battle to contain the New World screwworm. They are a vital part of the bulwark, says the Secretary of Agriculture.
This is not just a livestock issue. It's not just a cattle issue. It is a pet issue as well. And in fact, in some of the cases that have been found within 20, 30, 60 miles of the Mexican border in Mexico, many of those were feline, cats, and dogs.
In South Texas, that means pet owners inside the 20-kilometer containment area should not move them outside of the quarantine. They should also check open sores and wounds for larvae and report them to their local vet for treatment. For more information on the New World screwworm, you may go to screwworm.gov. Earlier today, we hope that you managed to catch another of the Farm Doc webinars, this one on premiums that you might garner from the system on crops you would grow that are premium crops. And Kelsey Graber is here. She's with Clarkson Grain, was on along with Nick Paulson and Gary Schnitke today to talk about how farmers can actually get into this marketplace. Let's first, Kelsey, begin with what is a premium crop?
So a premium crop would be anything that is different than a conventional yellow corn, a conventional soybean. So think of white corn, non-GMO, identity preserved, hybrid specific, and into organics.
Before we go further, because people are going to want to know, how do they find information on this related to Clarkson Grain? Is it clarksongrain.com?
There's also to be democratic and share more information about things that are available in the state of Illinois, there's a lot of places you can start. So I would recommend starting with your local elevators, seeing if they have any premium crop markets they can tap into, such as non-GMO soybeans. You can also reach out to your seed dealer, or there are a lot of other companies that are similar to Clarkson Grain in our area. So the Andersons, Rovi Grain. So there's a lot of places to start.
Here in Champaign County, many producers, and particularly in the region, will know that there is a Frito-Lay plant that they can grow for. It would be white corn. Is that considered one of the premium food grain corns that you might deal with?
Definitely, yeah. That's one of the lower-hanging fruit and easiest to enter, reaching out to them. There are limits to how much they'll buy, but that's a great way to enter. And I know that they work with the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois. But then we also work with organics into them as well. So that's something to consider as well.
For those of you who are regular listeners, you will hear Brian Stark talk, not about this generally, but on the air, talking about the marketplace. And he is at the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois, so you can get hold of him easily enough. Clarkson Grain, located outside of Cerro Gordo, Illinois, and has been there for a very long time now. They deal with a worldwide market. So tell me about this broad spectrum of the marketplace of the premium crop. So easy, low-hanging fruit is food-grade corn, white corn. What are harder things to get into?
Yeah, so we handle straight non-GMO and organic. Everything comes into our corn plant in Cerro Gordo or our soybean plant in Mattoon. We have just basic non-GMO white corn, non-GMO yellow corn, but then we also get into hybrid-specific or variety-specific soybeans in Mattoon. So most of our soybeans are being cleaned and sent to Japan, Southeast Asia for tofu, soy sauce, soy milk. So protein levels are very specific. Hilum color is very specific. In our corn, it's a little less labor-intensive as far as segregation, but those are just some of the opportunities available.
If I remember correctly, and those who have driven through Mattoon on the interstate will recognize, I believe you use the old popcorn plant there.
Exactly. Yep. The old popcorn plant right off the interstate. I think we have something like 150 bins out there. So in a world where segregation is key, it's the perfect setup for us.
It's identity preserved and they're small. I mean, these aren't big lots.
Nope. Most of them are 10 to 20,000 bushel bins. So
now, on that point, producers will want to know, what kind of impact does this have on my gross income as it's related per acre, and how long does it take to get there? Start with the low-hanging fruit and kind of move your way up.
Yeah, so non-GMOs are easily accessible. You can basically turn your operation over to that if you have the segregation for it. A lot of these are buyer's call opportunities, so they will have to be delivered in a 3-month to a 12-month period. So again, segregation is key, but entering those and starting to plant those is pretty simple. You can still use mostly the same agronomic practices you do with conventional grain. It just comes down to segregation in the end. So
I suppose the first step is to decide I might want to try this. Second step, contact somebody. Mm-hmm. And then anything else that they need to know as they begin the process?
I think just understanding the premiums, and also something is a lot of these are contracted grower programs. So make sure you're reaching out early and getting into these programs. So for instance, we're going to roll out our non-GMO buying program and premiums in September, and that will be for the 2027 crop, and then organics roll out in December. So these programs fill up fast. Also, seed availability can be limited as well. So if you're interested in it, I would really encourage you to start looking into those opportunities between now and August.
Thank you, Kelsey. Kelsey Graber is with Clarkson Grain Company. She joined Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson on the Farm Doc webinar earlier today entitled Premium Crop Market Opportunities. You can find it this afternoon on the Farm Doc website. Well, actually, the Farm Doc YouTube website. That's at youtube.com/@farmdoc. Let's turn our attention to the global growing regions. We're now joined by Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather, the CEO and president there, and joins us once a week. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. Always great being here, and thanks again for having me.
Turn your attention directly to the Corn Belt. Things are green here in Champaign County, but there's a little dryness, and even in the air, I mean, it feels really nice. Sometimes it can start to get humid. I was in Kansas earlier in the week, sticky out there. Surprisingly enough, a lot of rain in that area. Clearly, what do you think about the Corn Belt and how it's progressing through the season?
Well, so far, everything looks okay. It's a little too early in the season to have a whole lot of thoughts, either to how great everything is or to how poor everything is. In the particular case that we're in, it's a little bit unusual in that the northeast half of corn and soybeans are actually pretty dry. Our proprietary data shows that as of this point in June, this is one of the drier opens to a season for the U.S. corn crop as a whole, which might seem a little bit surprising because there's a very sharp delineation between that dry region and then the wetter regions off to the south and west. So the best case scenario we would have going forward would be if we could get a lot of rain in these drier areas. Now, the weather pattern that we're in is complex. We have a very large area of upper level high pressure that's centered on the central United States, and that's essentially going to linger for another 7 to 10 days. Small areas of energy will float underneath this high, but they won't have a real strong and clear direction. They'll just kind of float and wobble around between different areas of the plains and Corn Belt and the Mid-South, and basically produce pockets of showers and thunderstorms every day, but absent some real big and major rain events. In the end, though, Todd, by the time we get into late next week, we think that the western half of corn and soybeans will have received anywhere from 0.5 inch to 1.5 inches of rain, while the eastern half will probably have received a little bit less than that. And so this story where we have kind of some dry conditions in some areas and okay to good conditions in other areas is essentially going to persist despite a lot of rain chances here and there over the next week.
We started here me suggesting that the weather in our area was really nice. And because it's, well, warm, it's not been hot. What do the temperatures over the next couple of weeks look like?
Well, the next 10 days are going to be pretty much a repeat of what we've been seeing lately. We'll see highs in the 80s to even the 90s in some northern areas over the next 7 to 10 days. And that's a result of, or due to that upper level high. And that pretty much encompasses all of the central U.S. So temperatures will be pretty nice during the day and in the 50s and 60s at night. So overall, warmer than normal, which is pretty good for growing corn and soybeans. There are some changes that appear to be on the horizon once we get into next weekend, so around 10 days from now. we can see that a large system is going to approach from the west. And that should crack the current setup that we're in, where we have this large upper-level high just kind of sitting in place. That will start to cause it to weaken a little bit. And as a result of that, we think temperatures are going to turn considerably cooler once we get into next weekend and then into the following week. Now, are we looking for a major cool spell? That doesn't appear real likely at this point in time, just because we don't have a whole lot of cool air anywhere across the northern hemisphere at the moment. But we think it will turn cooler, and we'll see highs maybe in the 70s and 80s, as opposed to the 80s and 90s around 10 to 15 days from now.
Can you take a look at the spring wheat growing regions for me in particular? The hard red, mostly done at this point, and if you want to talk about that, that's cool. However, spring wheat is in the process still.
Well, yeah, and spring wheat does have some problems. You might have seen earlier this week that 47% of that crop was rated good and excellent for the current week. That's the third lowest rating going back to 1986. So it just tells you that things don't look real good at the moment. And the reason for that is very obvious. April and May across the region was one of the drier on record going back to 1971. And the cumulative effects of all that dry weather is showing up in these low condition ratings. Now, it has rained quite a bit over the last week, so they are starting to receive some of the rains that they need to get out of this situation. And there are quite a few more rains ahead going forward, primarily due to the wobbly areas of energy we talked about earlier, and then also that big system that approaches the central U.S. 7 to 10 days from now. So between all that, we think that conditions for spring wheat will continue to improve. But even if they don't improve by a huge amount in the United States, they certainly will in Canada, because these systems are going to move right across the U.S.-Canada border. And that's a nice setup for good rains in the prairies. So some of the North American spring wheat crop is going to be looking pretty fantastic, we think, 10 to 15 days from now. And whether or not that includes a lot of the U.S. or a little bit of the U.S. is probably the biggest uncertainty.
Check in on the crops in Europe.
Well, they're in a pretty great pattern for rains, too. The jet stream is basically lined up from Europe right through Russia, and that's going to bring lots of decent rains to the wheat crop across the European Union, as well as Ukraine and across Russia. That will also include the rapeseed crop, which might benefit from a little bit more rain. And of course, there's a swath of corn grown there too. So all these North American regions, Todd, in that area and across North America are looking pretty good at the moment, with the forecast looking pretty nice and soil moisture generally okay, except for that northern half of U.S. corn.
And before I let you go, congratulations, I'm told, are in order, because on Monday, June the 1st of this week, you celebrated 20 years of T-Storm weather. Just fantastic. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Todd. It's been a wild ride, and it started right there in Champaign and has moved from then to Chicago and now in Naperville. But I'm closely tied to Champaign and the university because of that. So thank you very much.
That's Mike Tenuri. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for Thursday afternoon. Don't forget, you can catch Commodity Week on the website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. Listen to it in its entirety on our home station tomorrow afternoon and or on many of these radio stations over the weekend. You have a good day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.